Now, it's time for a little R&R.
Ball into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo. We got Damian Perez behind the glass today. We're at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. Got a lot to do today. A lot to talk about because we got game one of the World Series tonight between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Toronto Blue Jays in Toronto. Should be a good time there. We got a good college football slate this weekend. You got Inter-Miami playoff action tonight. You got a good NFL slate all up ahead, and we're going to hear from the general manager of the Florida Panthers, who are sitting at 4-5 through 9 games, have lost 5 of their last 6 games to this point in the season on their quest for a three-peat. Bill Zito will join us in just about 40 minutes live on the air, so looking forward to talking with the general manager of the Florida Panthers. That's all to come here. 888-760-3776, number to get into the program. We got Damian Perez behind the glass today at the City Place Studios. First of all, Mike, we got baseball World Series tonight. Mike.
I can't, listen. I'm going to be working during it. I'm going to have an eye on it. I don't like that it's starting on a Friday, but what are you going to do? But I do like the pitching matchup of Snell and Yesavage. I think the pitching matchup intrigues me. I want to see if Snell could do the same stuff he did against the Brewers, and I want to see if the Blue Jay pitching is going to be able to hold up against the Dodger lineup. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun. You know, the thing is now you get the World Series, so that's going to be, you know, every day at night we're going to be watching that. But, you know, yesterday the game stunk on the Thursday night game.
Oh, God.
It was a godforsaken
game. It was godforsaken.
You took advantage. You know what Mike watched for the first time? You watched the James Bond Skyfall movie with Daniel Craig,
so,
which I'm blown away you haven't seen, by the way.
So I don't think Damian Perez, our producer at the City Place Studios, you haven't watched the Daniel Craig Bond movies?
No, okay. I'm really bad with movies.
I highly suggest, there's 5 of them. I've seen 3 out of the 5. I think they're all great movies. Now, I saw Casino Royale numerous times. The first time I saw it, Kyle, was actually one of the last outings, you know, I was able to go out with my grandfather before he passed away back in 07. He was a big Bond guy, so I saw the movie with him, and then I'm on Amazon. You know, the game stinks, Kyle. And I'm like, oh, screw this. I'm done with this game. What movies are on here? I start scrolling through. I'm like, oh, my God. All the Daniel Craig Bond movies are on here.
They are great.
So I texted you. I said, dude, about to start, you know, the Daniel Craig. You know, I've seen pieces. You know how it is. Like, growing up on TV, you'd see pieces. But I never watched them start to finish. So I started with Quantum Solace. Unreal movie. People didn't like it. People didn't like the movie.
It's the worst
I liked
it. Of the bunch. Yeah.
So, are we all right with spoilers at this point, 15 years later?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I liked how they took pieces from one, because I grew up watching the old school
Bond
movies.
What pieces are we talking about?
From Russia with Love and whatever. They would, you know, they would reference it every now and then, but like, you actually carried over the storyline. But Bond was upset how Vesper, he thought at the time, did him dirty. He didn't think that she actually loved him. And that was the whole movie. He was on this rampage because he wasn't over his lover, kind of.
From the Casino Royale.
Correct, kind of messing him over. You want to know who's a great character? Was the French assassin who he thinks, Rivas?
Yeah, I couldn't remember his name.
Regardless, amazing character. And the Bolivian police pull him over. He's just got the body in the trunk, and he had no idea who was in there.
Sounds like you were more into Quantum Solace than you were Skyfall.
No. But like, I watched him back to back. I did 4 hours of Bond yesterday.
Wow.
Right, I punted on the game.
You're plugged in.
I was up till 1 a.m. watching Bond last night. I finished Skyfall around 1. I was really impressed. The most thing I was impressed with Skyfall was the scenes, the hotel in Shanghai. The
that's
casino.
A movie with money behind it.
Oh, yeah. Dude, the casino. And I understand now. I went back and did my research why people didn't like QOS, Quantum of Solace. And they said it was during the writer's strike in Hollywood. And that a lot of the kind of lines that were in the movie were made up by basically Daniel Craig running on the fly. I don't know. I thought there were 2 great movies. I'm looking forward to watching Spectre tonight. And then you said you like the wrap-up the most.
Skyfall is the best. Casino Royale is the best movie. I think Skyfall and the last, well, there's 5 of them. the last one, No Time to Die, are the best ones.
I have not. Let's put this.
If you liked Quantum of Solace, you're going to like Spectre.
Perfect.
So you're going to be fine.
Perfect. And I'm interested to see the new M. By the way, the male M who fills in for the late M, he's Voldemort.
Ralph Fiennes. Yeah.
Like, I know this guy from somewhere. I'm watching the movie. I go, the hell do I know this guy from? And then finally, I'm like, wait a minute, that's Lord Voldemort. So, yeah. And ironically enough, he was the main baddie in Red Dragon, the movie I watched two nights ago.
Okay.
So I've seen a lot of that guy the last couple of nights.
Ralph Fiennes on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're jazzed up on Bond right now.
Dude, I can't get enough of it. And I really think the scenes, like, I guess atypical male. Dude, the action scene to start off Skyfall, the running on the trains, the take the shot.
Yeah,
like, Bond, like, unbelievable. He falls down the waterfall, and then after he falls down the waterfall, kill the credits, baby. And just amazing, amazing movies. I'm really enjoying it. I can't wait to watch the final two. I'm juiced up right now. Cannot wait to watch the final two.
You're into Skyfall. It
was so good. I mean, the baddie.
Best villain, Silva. That's the best one.
He was unreal.
That's Javier Bardem.
I loved when they had him in quarantine and he takes out his teeth because, like, he swallowed the cyanide pill when he got caught by the Chinese when M gave him up for the other people that the Chinese were keeping. Dude, and the storyline. I mean, listen to the storyline. Incredible. Incredible writing in Skyfall. But yeah, I told you I grew up watching all the old ones from Russia with Love and all that, and I really enjoy. I think the Daniel Craig ones are my favorite. Now, who is the one I always forget this Bond's name? Nightfall or Goldeneye? Who is the Bond in
Sean Connery?
He was good. He was good. The Goldeneye Bond, I think, is up there with Daniel Craig, but I probably think Daniel Craig.
I think those are the best movies too. I have not seen all the old Bonds, but I do think the Craig ones.
Yeah, dude, from Russia with Love is great because the car. You know, remember his car in Skyfall? They basically take that from Russia with Love, and that's why I loved the reference when they're at the Skyfall mansion, and the car just has the machine guns on it, and it, dude, unbelievable. Unbelievable. You like Q in Skyfall.
I like Q. I like the guy in the chair. I'm a guy in the chair guy. If you have a good guy in the chair in these action movies, I'm a fan.
Okay. He was, there was great back and forth in the generational gap between Bond and Q.
Get on the train. And he's like, I'm going back and forth. Q, do I get on the train? And he goes back, yeah, it's great.
And like, there's like a 10-second pause.
Doubt. It's great.
Bond, get on the train. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's great. Unbelievable. You're going to enjoy that. That's like getting to a good movie series.
I'm surprised they killed off the secondary lead. The secondary lead female as early as they did.
We came out 15 years ago.
But you know what? I'm surprised they killed her off in Skyfall. Because she was at the casino. I thought she was going. But, like, that's what makes a movie great. It's like, you know, people got to die.
You establish the skits.
Yeah, but, like, I hate some of these movies where, like, everyone lives happy ever after and something. Like, that doesn't happen. You know what I mean? Like, people die. So, like, and like, the whole whiskey thing, and that was, dude, great movie. Great movie.
So where do you rank them? Casino Royale, Skyfall, Quantum of Solace right now?
I'd probably go Skyfall 1, Casino Royale 2, Quantum of Solace 3, but...
Another movie that has a great open is Casino Royale, like, when they're chasing that guy.
The big thing for me, I can't believe the bad rap that QOS got, because I really liked it. I gave it like an 8 out of 10.
Dude, you're going to be very pleased with Spectre.
And Fields was great in that movie. Yeah. That was another secondary lead that got killed off early in the movie,
too. You're going to love the other two. I think so. I'd be shocked if you didn't, if you liked what you've seen so far.
And I got to take notes, man. James Bond's got some real charm, man. He's a real ladies' man over there. He knows what he knows the game, dude. Bond knows the game. Let's just put it that way. You got to take some notes, Dave.
Mike's sitting there on his couch. Wow.
Yeah. How
do you think of that?
Right, right.
It's just a like movie with a secret agent.
The one-liners.
Gosh, that was witty.
Very much so. Very impressed. Now, Damien, you have a significant other, so no need for that. But Colin, we should take some notes.
David, you got to watch it. I'm surprised you haven't seen any of those. Those are good movies.
Yeah, I'm kind of bought in after that.
Dude,
I haven't seen Mike this jazzed about anything in a while.
Dude, amazing. 80% of the movie is nonstop action. And those are Bond movies. Like, those are usually what Bond movies are all about. But you'll like the storyline. You'll get hooked on the characters. I will say the worst villain was Dominic Green from QOS. He was the worst villain by far. But it made sense. You know, I thought the plot line made sense. I didn't necessarily agree with everybody in the plot holes that everyone said that the movie had.
All right. So The mic's into James Bond. I'm curious, will you be done before Monday? So we'll hear about it Monday.
Please, I might be done tonight.
All right.
I got Inter Miami till about midnight tonight. Damien and I. I might stay up till 4 in the morning. It's good. Damien's seen me tired for Saturday tailgate in the past. You might be scraping me up off the floor at 7 a.m. when I walk in here for Saturday.
You might
tailgate.
Be so jazzed to talk about that. Might be a James Bond episode. You might do Saturday
tailgate. That might be the first segment.
Entirely James Bond.
Spectre. I'm interested. Like I said, I'm interested to see new M and how they incorporate, because the old M was just such a well-known character, you know, and it was in all the movies. And like, I also read they killed her off because I was surprised they killed her off. I thought she was going to live. They killed her off to, quote, start the new generation of Bond. And 2021 was when that last movie came out. When the hell is the next Bond movie? It's been five years.
All right, so watch the movies, and then we'll talk about the next Bond.
Okay, but it's been 5 years. Don't spoil it.
There's some stuff going on. I'm not going to tell you anything.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Fair play. Fair play. Now, what do you watch? Are you watching any? Because you are a movie guy.
I'm going to see the Springsteen this weekend. Springsteen movie came out this weekend.
Okay.
And apparently it's pretty good. Bruce Springsteen, it's about him making the Nebraska album in 84, I want to say.
Love Bruce.
So I'll try to watch that. I don't know when.
I gave you homework, though. You got to watch three movies for me. Number one, Damien, have you ever seen Starsky and Hutch with Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, and Owen Wilson?
No, I have not.
So we did Disco Hour at the Boca Golf outing.
And Mike told me I had to get to watch
it. And I'm like, dude. Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson,
and
Ben Stiller, like, you gotta watch. It was core childhood memory watching that movie. And then the other two, Silence of the Lambs.
I've seen Silence of the Lambs.
And then Red Dragon.
I have not seen Red Dragon's
unbelievable.
Silence of the Lambs all-time classic.
Very good. And listen, Ed Norton, I think a lot of his movies are hit and miss. I like a lot of Ed Norton movies. I don't like a lot of Ed. But this one, I think, was his best one yet. It was his best character. He played the character.
Have you seen Fight Club?
I have. Okay. I have.
And you like that more than Fight Club?
That is considered probably his best movie, but I think Red Dragon, Kyle, 2002, it's got that early 2000 feel to it. It's the prequel to Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. I think it's very good. I think it's an excellent movie.
Wow. Okay, so you've watched a couple movies past
the
movie.
I had the movie bug.
It's a good thing to have. No problem.
Yeah, I had the movie bug. And then the Cavalier game is what really got me on the movie bug, by the way. Them losing to the doggone Knicks that game one. I said, all right, I need something to take my mind off of it. And sure enough, I hit Red Dragon, and then all the suggestions start popping up. And then I told you how Bond started last night on a whim on Amazon Prime.
That's how it goes. World Series is tonight.
Yeah, right into the World Series. And who's going to be the James Bond of the World Series tonight? Kyle, I told you I think this is Dodgers in five. I don't see this being close. The only way it is close, and the reason I wanted the Toronto Blue Jays to be here instead of the Mariners, is because of the bats. The bats can win the Blue Jays a game and hopefully two. But with the way the Dodger pitching staff is pitching, I don't see this being close. Now, the time off, chicken or the egg, right? Is it going to help them? Is it going to be a detriment? We'll find out tonight. But forgive me for thinking a team who has been rested, sitting at home, ready to go, that they're going to be ready to play baseball tonight coming up.
Is, to you, both games must win for Toronto?
I would believe so. Just because you don't want to go back to LA with the chance of never coming back home, correct? I mean, the 2-3-2, you don't want to go to LA with a chance of not coming back. And they've been unreal.
Big thing is showing that they're beatable. I think that's going to be a big part of the series. But yes, I agree.
Hear me out on this though, Kyle. The Dodgers, outside of Babe Schwarber, obviously his name's Kyle, folks, that's my nickname for him. Outside of Babe Schwarber hitting two home runs, they've been a fortress at home this postseason. They've won many aways too. They've out-hit teams in games.
And mostly they've shut them down. Yeah, they've shut them down.
And that's majority of it, but they've proved that they can hit if this gets to kind of a shootout kind of game. Now, their games haven't turned into that because they've pitched so well. But forgive me for thinking the 1-for-9 that they have, that they're going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Toronto if Toronto does put up that 6-7 runs that we've seen in the past. So I think tonight we'll get a good sense on how the series is going to go. I really do. If Toronto shows up and they win in a big spot and they dominate the Dodgers, game on. I'm in. I'm all in. All right? But if it's more of the same, Blake Snell being unstoppable, putting people down, setting that 1-9 down, Dodgers in five. I think this is the most important. It's so funny I'm about to say this. You'll probably disagree. I think it's the most important game of the series for the Blue Jays. Similar to the Brewers. Remember the Brewers in the NLCS, they had a chance to steal game one.
I agree with you. This game, the Dodgers perhaps catching them flat, catching them off guard. Snell's been their best pitcher this postseason. Catching him, it would be a big spiritual victory for Toronto if they were able to steal it. Another thing for Toronto here, they don't have a single left-handed starter as a pitcher, and they only have two left-handed bullpen arms that are available, and both of them have gotten blown up this postseason. So no lefties, so situational pitching is not going to favor the Blue Jays. They're just going to throw a bunch of righties. That favors Shohei Ohtani. Mm-hmm. That favors Freddie Freeman, Max Muncy, the lefties in that lineup that are just going to see
terrorize righties. They're going to terrorize the righties. And I think another thing to point out, too, I believe you said this earlier when you filled in for Theo for Theoretically Speaking, but Bo Bichette, he's going to be available.
He'll be available. They'll DH him. They'll figure out how to deploy him. It doesn't sound like he's healthy enough to be
on the flip side for the Dodgers. How about Clayton Kershaw?
Yeah, so one thing about the Dodgers is Alex Vesia, who's been their probably most consistent bullpen arm outside of Roky Sasaki, who's been their closer. He's going to be out with a personal issue. It sounds like they're not going to have him for at least today, at least tomorrow. Nobody knows when he's coming back.
So you throw a lefty like Kershaw in there.
Kershaw's got blown up in that one game he came back in. So I think all eyes are on if they'll go to him and give him a high leverage position. I'd like to think they would if they had to. But the one time we did see him, it was a nightmare against Philadelphia.
If I could build the storyline for you guys real quick. You know, Kershaw, what's the one thing with him? Lack of postseason success. Oh, they won.
Has not been a good postseason pitcher.
How apropos would it be for Kershaw's career to come in a big spot, go like three innings?
I agree.
People would only
remember. They would only remember what's recent. You know, he's already a Hall of Famer. He's already a first ballot. He's already one of the best pitchers of all time.
Correct.
But having postseason moments adds to that. And that being maybe your last opportunity. I agree. I'm rooting for it. I just don't know if Dave Roberts is going to do it. The manager of the Dodgers giving Clayton Kershaw a big opportunity, but he might be forced to with no Vesia.
That and is there going to be an opportunity? If Snow goes seven, if these starters continue, if Ohtani goes six,
I'd like to think that the Toronto offense is going to apply a little bit more pressure than what Milwaukee does.
Because the two guys you've seen out of the pen, really, Kyle, Sasaki and Trinan. You know, those are really the only two guys. And Sasaki has done extended outings.
And Vesia, yeah. And Vesia, you're not going to have.
That too.
You're not going to have him.
You know, what was the game Vesia struggled? Was that the Philly game? Wasn't he the one who got blown up?
And then they left Kershaw in for about three innings.
That's it. So those two guys got blown up in the Babe Schwarber game.
But he's been reliable other than that. It's going to be the question of, can the Toronto Blue Jays hit the Dodgers starters? If they can, this series changes quickly.
I mean, I could only imagine Kike Hernandez, Teoscar Hernandez, Tommy Edmond, the greatest postseason player ever. You know, that's what I'm going to be starting to call him.
Can the hitting hit the starters? Can Toronto's hitting hit the Dodgers starters? All eyes are on that in Game 1 of the World Series. Tonight we'll continue the conversation, give our official series predictions a little later on. First, the ESPN South Florida app is free to download on the App Store. Listen to myself and Mike. Listen to Theoretically Speaking. Listen to Inter Miami English and Spanish broadcast playoff game tonight. You can hear all this on ESPN 106.3. Also on the app, listen to Florida Panthers home. All the games right here with the new home of the Florida Panthers on their quest for a three-peat. We'll hear from Bill Zito in just about 20 minutes. That's all to come here, but it's on the ESPN South Florida app. Make sure you download it today on the App Store. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo, Damian Perez filling in for Christian Catt. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. She ain't gonna tie me down.
Got you on the road. Got it on the shirt, saw the hat, saw the phone. Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3 with Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo, Damian Perez. We're at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. Having a great time here on a Friday edition of the program. If you've been in a car accident, truck accident, suffered a slip and fall, my friends Mark Anajar and Glenn Levine at Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys, they're the type that fight for you. They don't charge you unless you win. They work tirelessly to get you the maximum compensation that you deserve. They are the best in the business. Why settle for just any attorney? Demand the best. Demand Anajar and Levine today. Because that's the Anajar and Levine difference. Take that one phone call. Take back control of your life. Don't wait. Call for the free consultation today. Call 1-800-747-FREE. 1-800-747-3733. Take back control now with Anajar and Levine. You got the World Series tonight. You had a bad Thursday night football game last night, 37-10. the Chargers. We should have taken that as our number one. We should have taken that in cover five. Well, number two, we should have taken it in
remember,
Survivor.
Remember, both teams were in a rut. Dude, all right, I'm there. The Vikings stink. That team stinks.
Yeah,
I'm
and
there.
Now they're going to go back team, to they that have team. Quarterback stinks. Problem. They have a quarterback problem.
They do. And that's why I believe, yeah, I did say, you can go back and listen, folks, ESPN South Florida app. But I said yesterday, I think at the end of the season, they're going to be going, God, why the hell did we get rid of Sam Darnold?
Yeah, let him walk out right at the door. Yep. And they signed cheap for Seattle. Now you're sitting there thinking, I mean, McCarthy, now a lot of pressure. They're playing Detroit next game. That's a big rivalry game, sitting at 3-4 at Detroit. And then they got the Ravens, who need the game. And then they got the Bears, Packers, Seahawks, Commanders. That's five playoff teams in a row.
It is. And to your point about the problem, Wentz stinks, and it looks like McCarthy isn't ready. And listen, I tip my cap to Kevin O'Connell because
what has happened to him too? He got hurt in that first game.
I know.
And I haven't seen him in two
months.
And
like, dude, outside of that second half against the Bears where they won on Monday Night Football, I did one quarter of football. And by the way, can I get back on me being upset about him getting the NFC Offensive Player of the Week that week?
A joke.
I mean, spare me. It was one quarter, but he's not ready. And listen, this isn't me calling McCarthy a bust.
Well, let's see. Yeah, now
it's
let's
not
see.
Me calling him a bust.
You had your pseudo reset. Now you had your reset. You know, Bryce Young had that last year. Can you actually utilize that and get better because of this? Now you get to sit, get a little game film, get a little feel, reset a little bit, get healthy, and now go attack.
But I also think a Viking fan would tell you, I understand Wentz in the offense isn't doing the defense much favors, but the defense has given up points too, a lot of points. So I think they're in a heap of trouble. They're definitely the worst team in that division. And how about the Bears?
I think that's the biggest game of the weekend is them at Baltimore.
And like specifically with the Bears, where I was going with that, like we always say that at the NFL, no matter who you are in the NFL, you got that one game where you're kicking yourself in the leg. I think that's going to be the game for the Bears this year. Is that game that they had won on their home field. It's just an epic collapse in the fourth quarter. So, like, big game, obviously, for the Bears coming up for Baltimore. They're a four-game win streak the first time since 2018. Let's give them some credit.
Yeah, think about the Bears for a second. They're 4-2 going to Baltimore. Baltimore's coming off a bye. Lamar Jackson is going to play, so he is back healthy. They're a healthier team than they were 2 weeks ago where they were basically battered. Everybody was on the injury report. They still get a couple guys on IR. It's a 1 o'clock game. The Ravens absolutely bar none need this game. Their season is over if they do not win this. So that's why I would hammer Baltimore here. They need the game.
Dare I say it's already over? I'm there. I took 1-5.
I have a hard time seeing the Bears knock off the Ravens. And Lamar is great against NFC opponents as well. That's number one. But on top of that, the Bears of all franchises basically putting the cap on the Baltimore Ravens' season. That's just something I can't get behind.
I can't
see that.
And we took them in our cover five picks. That is Baltimore. We like that game a lot. I think Baltimore will win. But, Kyle, if I could defend my take of they're already done, brother, 1-5, too much margin for error. There's too much margin for error throughout the season.
For a defense that stinks.
Look at Cincinnati last year and the horrible start that they had. Baltimore has a worse start than them.
Well, worse.
They have a worse start than that Cincinnati team that was fighting from behind at the end of the season to make the playoffs.
That's not to say that they're going to be a tough out here these next couple weeks when they believe they have a chance. Because until they lose that sixth or seventh game, and maybe in the next six weeks, that will be when that team starts to, all right, we don't necessarily see the ending. But 1-5, I know you might think it's crazy, but there is a path. They are thinking, and I don't want to keep just circling back to the schedule. They got the Dolphins, Vikings, Browns, and Jets next.
Let me add another layer to that. The saving grace is how bad the division is this year.
Yeah.
The saving grace is...
The Steelers losing that game to Cincinnati really helps.
And that opened the door, but, I mean, man, you really think 10 wins. I think the Steelers could walk into 10 wins and win that. And with how the Steelers only having two losses at this point, and how Mike Tomlin plays, the Steelers rarely get blown out. They're in all of these games. They're going to have chances to win these games. With a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who is very experienced, I think that is going to carry them to 10 wins and probably a division title with the Ravens being a 1-5.
Now, the one thing I can say about the Ravens.
And quickly about the Bengals, because we haven't touched on them yet in that division. Forgive me for thinking the Flacco fever is going to come to an end. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm dead wrong here, and I'm still bitter that it didn't work out in Cleveland.
There's a path for all these teams, and I think the fact is that
path for all these teams besides?
Besides Cleveland.
Thank you.
The Ravens are thinking, all right, well, are the Steelers going to surprise everybody and win more than 10 games? The answer is probably no. They're probably going to do exactly what they always do and win that 9-8, 10-7 type of season, and therefore the Ravens have a number in mind. They have a number in mind thinking that we need to go 9-2. Mm. We need to go 9-2 to finish off the year. And then all of a sudden, if we win the right games against the Steelers, 10-7, it's doable. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're thinking. And that if I was a coach, that's what I would say. Hey, need to go 9-2. It starts with one, but this is now every week is the Super Bowl. That's what I view the Ravens as, and that's why I'm not counting them out until I see them lose that next game. If they lose this game, I'm out on them.
Okay.
But I'm going to hold on to that sliver of hope that they can.
Here's my – what's the big difference between 1-6 and then, say they win this week and then they're 2-6?
I think it's spiritual. I think it's spiritual.
Fair.
Because you lose after that bye, and that was the game to win. It was a one playoff opponent that you could have played to kind of inspire a little bit of fuel and fight. That's a demoralizing loss. If the Bears walk into their building and beat them, that will cripple them. That'll finish them off.
If the Ravens rattle off 4 in a row, then okay, let's have a conversation about it. You know, that's where I'm at. That you got to win 4 games in a row and get back to 500. You're 1-5. And that's why you take it with a grain of salt because Lamar has been injured. The one thing you don't take with a grain of salt if you're a Raven fan is how bad the defense is. How ironic is it that the worst team in the AFC North has the best defense in Cleveland? I mean, the Bengals defense is a joke. I don't know what the hell is going on with the Steelers defense this year, but it's
the best of the bunch, but it's not good.
And then the Ravens defense, I mean, please. I mean, statistically, they might be a bottom three defense in the entire league at this point.
Yes.
And I heard conversations before the year from the big wigs that cover the league nationally that's the best secondary they've had since 2002. My God, can we take a step back maybe a little bit?
I agree with that. That's ridiculous. And it's a shame because they got a young defensive coordinator, Terrence Orr, who hasn't done anything of substance yet, and they're probably going to get – and Harbaugh, this is all falling on Harbaugh. This is all falling on John Harbaugh as the head coach because I know Lamar's been hurt, but when you're not winning the games you should win and you start losing the games – all right, you lose to good teams. That's one thing. You lose to the Bills on the road week one. You blow that lead, fine. But if you start losing games you should win – doesn't matter if they're terrible or if the Raven defense stinks or not. You got an MVP caliber quarterback. You got an MVP caliber running back. You got good offensive pieces. If you start losing the games you should, that's when the walls are going to start crumbling down on Harbaugh and company.
You could argue that everything has gone wrong for them. Derrick Henry's putting the ball on the rug, something he hasn't done in about 6 years. Lamar getting hurt. The injuries to the defensive side.
Offensive line. It doesn't
end. It's been a nightmare, and I think the bye week, to our credit, taking them on cover 5, -6.5, the bye week did them wonders.
We're on the same page that the Baltimore, they're going to come inspired this week.
If they don't, I question the coach.
This is really one of the and
if
I know
they don't
it's
come
a good
in
team.
Inspired, then I'd you can't
blown,
question it.
I'd be blown away if the Ravens don't win this game. I'd be blown away. I would take the Ravens right now. No problem. I'd take a money line. I would take them to win by 15. I think they're going to win. I don't care if the Bears are playing well. It's more about the Ravens.
Could this be Caleb Williams' signature game? On the road.
This is a game you remember. This is a game that changes and to even endorse the opportunity. This is the game for the Bears. If they were able to win that, that's the game that changes the whole – that changes the culture. That's the game that – wow, you knocked off – and I know they were not as good as they usually are, but you knock off the Ravens in their building, take them out of playoff contention when Lamar was healthy and played. That is where you start to think, all right, the complexion of this team, this franchise is starting to change.
And Williams, sack numbers, he's been sacked 5 times in 3 weeks. It's, pretty good for him.
That's great.
For his standards.
They'll sign up for that. No
being
problem.
One of the most sacked quarterbacks in the history of the league.
60 times last year.
Yep, and I want to say he's taking care of the ball. 2 interceptions in 3 weeks. The problem is the touchdown numbers are there. But
they've been running the ball all over the place.
That and we joked around about new head coach Ben Johnson saying, go be Superman. He hasn't done that. And listen, that was the wrong advice.
Go win the game. Go win the game.
But that's what he's done the last 3 weeks. 212 yards, 252 yards, 172. He threw for .172 and an interception, and they won by 12 points. They won with defense and running the football with Swift.
No problem, indeed. That's the most intriguing game of the weekend is the Chicago and the Baltimore Ravens. We get a loop in somebody who knows all about winning, and we're going to talk to Bill Zito, the general manager of the Florida Panthers, who are on their quest for a three-peat. Coming up on the other side, first, you want to win a sports weekend of a lifetime? Dare and Hard Rock Bet have teamed up to give one lucky winner tickets to 2 epic rivalries. Florida versus Tampa Bay in hockey on November 15th and Miami versus New York in the NBA on November 17th. You get $1,000 in cash and $500 in bonus bets if you win this weekend. You can enter to win by heading to the Day Club, at Seminole Ridge Hard Rock Hollywood Hotel and Casino every Sunday. This is every Sunday at Dare from 12 to 4 p.m. and place a $50 bet in bets on Hard Rock Bet. The best place to watch, win, party every single game day. Don't miss out. You got till November 5th to enter. Ready to roll? It's Hard Rock Bet offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus. Physically present in for the wager. Terms and conditions apply. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem, please call 1-833-PLAY-WISE. Bill Zito, the general manager of the Florida Panthers since 2020, has basically turned around that entire franchise and one of the best executives in the entire league. We talked to him. We'll be coming up on the other side of things. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Colin Russo with the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. You know them. They're on their quest for a three-peat. They've won two Stanley Cups in a row. They've been to three. They got everybody locked down under contract. You wonder who is the wizard who put all that together. He joins us now. It's Bill Zito, the general manager of the Florida Panthers, with us now on ESPN 106.3. Bill, welcome in. How you doing today? What's going on?
We're doing. I'm doing great. Thanks. Yeah, beautiful day, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, Bill, is this the quiet time of the year? You got all the contract extensions all wrapped up under on pen to paper, all set in stone, and now you can just sort of enjoy the season a little bit, or does work never stop with you?
Well, you know, in our business, it doesn't stop. Now you start your planning. A lot of admin stuff now, a lot of scouting, a lot of planning and prepping for, you know, all the what-ifs, the myriad of what happens if two guys get injured, how are you going to deal with that, for example. But, yeah, we're staying pretty busy, but it's always fun at the beginning of the year to get back to watching hockey and playing hockey and being around it every day.
Yeah, being around it every day and on top of staying busy, doing stuff like the Panthers on the Prowl program, which is that fundraiser that benefits the American Cancer Society. This is something that you and your wife, Julie, have really spearheaded, co-chaired to this point. Tell us a little bit about where this kind of came about on your end and why'd you build it the way it is to grow as much as it is as we see it today in South Florida.
Well, our family's been affected by the disease pretty significantly. We lost Julie's mom, my sister. Julie's a breast cancer survivor. And we had worked in my last stop in Columbus on some fundraising to fight cancer initiatives. So we were asked to be the chair people for American Cancer Society after having already worked with the Promise Fund. And rather than the sort of traditional model of having a dinner party or something and asking people for help, we thought this Panthers on the Prowl concept would work, and it was Julie's idea. We both lived in Chicago when they had, I don't know if you're familiar, they had cows on parade.
Yep.
When life-size cows were up and down Michigan Avenue and people would decorate them and put them out, it became a big thing. Like, it became its own tourist attraction. So when we started this, our thought process was we want to raise $1 million. We want to sell 200 of these things. And you could buy one, Colin, and it could be about your sick brother. Joe's Pizza could buy one and just have it be fun and have it dressed up like it can be anything for anybody, whether I'm just a member of the community and it's important to me and I want to support, whether I want to have messaging, it means something really important to me or to my family and friends, and bring the community together. And that was really our goal. And there's a local artist, a globally renowned artist, Romero Brito, who's a friend. And he said, listen, if I do mine, you could probably auction it and make even more fun. So then we started the idea of getting celebrities to do them, and then we'll auction those. So this is a full year-long process. Tomorrow night we've invited those Panthers that are already completed. And local, some actually got shipped in from around the world. And we're just going to bring everybody together. And I think the images that are going to come out tomorrow of all these Panthers in one room is going to be, I don't want to get too dramatic and say life-altering, but it's going to be very impactful. They're in a storage room at the rink, and last night I couldn't leave the room. I just sat in there just marveling at how wonderful each one of these Panthers was.
And it's fascinating because fundraisers like this bring communities, bring people from all different backgrounds together. And despite the circumstances, it's doing good work. It's understanding what art can be, how sports can impact community. And as somebody who has now been here for a number of years running the Florida Panthers, I don't think anybody's a stranger to the fact that the Panthers have sort of taken over South Florida. And that's not only because of the performance on the ice. That's because of things like this, the performance off the ice, that allow the community to really feel the presence of the Panthers. Tell me about building that community that you, and on top of all the players and everybody involved with the Florida Panthers, have really making it a prideful thing to kind of expand.
It's very interesting, and it's very real. It starts with our ownership. If you know the Viola family, everything's a family. Everything is about the community. It transcends down through the people that we have here who care, who are so proud to be from South Florida. The folks in Broward County, the Fort Lauderdale, like everybody comes together. The Palm Beach County folks all come to our game. So everybody, it's like bringing everybody together really to have a lot of fun and enjoy the games, enjoy each other. And the public outreach part from our players is real. They want to help. They like going to the hospitals. They like seeing the kids. They like doing things in the community because they're proud of being from here. So we're really blessed.
Panthers OT Prowl on Twitter/X to keep involved and keep in touch with the great work that the Zitos are doing alongside local celebrities and Panthers and people from worldwide making a real difference in this community. Bill, we appreciate the time. The general manager of the Florida Panthers, Bill Zito, with us now. Bill, you were born in Pittsburgh. You're a Wisconsin guy. Do you consider yourself a Wisconsinite? I don't know what they say out of Pittsburgh. Is it the Yinzer that they say? What do you consider yourself here?
I'm from Wisconsin. I was born in Pittsburgh, still have lots of ties. My grandparents lived in Punxsutawney till they died. My father went to Pitt. Fun fact, his college roommate was Mike Ditka.
Wow, how about that?
So it's funny that the day I took the job, I had to get on a flight and I went to Boston to see one of our guys. Guy sitting next to me chats me up and comes out as it's Ty Law because we had the masks on. I'm like, so we start talking and I go, Ty, you're from Aliquippa. He says, of all the things that like no Super Bowl, no play a Pro Bowl, no Heisman thing, Michigan. You said I'm from Aliquippa. I said, yeah, because Mike Ditka's from Aliquippa. Yeah. And Tony Dorsett. Yeah, it's my uncle. So it was a kind of a cute thing, but. But I grew up in Wisconsin and from Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, because I went to University of Wisconsin-Madison. I know you have some.
Oh, you did? What year?
I graduated 2 years ago. So I'm a Wisconsin guy through and through. But hold on. Bill, I'm from Connecticut originally. I went to Wisconsin. I'm one of those East Coast guys that shift over to the Midwest. You're sort of the same way. I mean, Pittsburgh is sort of the central East Coast.
No, I would say Pittsburgh's Midwest. But Connecticut is – where in Connecticut?
I'm from the Fairfield County area of Connecticut, so the New York Fairfield side. Prep? Yeah, not Fairfield Prep. Oh. I went to New Canaan High School, which is not far from there at all. So, look at this, Bill. You got the Fairfield County back. I love it. But the one thing I wanted to say is, like, the Wisconsinites, you were not born and raised, but that is – I've always wanted – I was curious. The Milwaukee area, that was a city that flirted back in the 90s, really, of getting an NHL hockey team. It never really happened. The money wasn't there. Some people say the presence of hockey is not felt there. I'm curious from your perspective, did you ever think that Milwaukee deserves an NHL franchise?
Yeah, because growing up, they've always had, now they have an American League franchise, the Admirals.
Yes.
But they've been there since I was a kid. I was actually a stick boy for them. I sold season tickets in the summer for them. So there's always the, you're kind of flirting with the idea of will an NHL franchise work? There's the popularity of the University of Wisconsin team. So hockey is expanding and growing throughout the state. It's getting bigger in Milwaukee. You already have an anchor tenant in the arena with the Bucks. So it's a little bit easier to absorb the second tenant, right? So yeah, there probably is a chance that it would work there.
It has a great presence of. I went to school there. There's a great presence of hockey all throughout. Yeah. You mentioned the AHL. That's the longest standing AHL franchise, and it's right there, sitting there. And they're asking for it. I don't know, Bill. Bill, you could pull the strings better than I can. If you want to spearhead it, I think you could knock that out. Now, it's fascinating about the Wisconsin connection. Bill Zito, the general manager of the Florida Panthers, with us now. Bill, you've had a fascinating career. A lot of the times with general managers throughout the NHL, a lot of them were former players. A lot of them had longstanding careers. You did a different path where you started out in the representation business. You started out in the law side of it. So you were representing players, and you Tuukka Rask most specifically. And you ended up shifting into the executive type role, the managing type role. I'm curious from your perspective, coming up and growing up, going through law school and everything. I know UW-Madison. Did you always want to be a lawyer, or was something representation, or did something in the back of your head think, one day I kind of want to run a team?
I always wanted to run a team. I enjoyed being a lawyer. Once I got sort of on that track, when I was an undergrad, I had clerked on Wall Street in a law firm and then continued through law school, and those folks encouraged me. I always wanted to be a general manager since high school. I had occasion to be a bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers, and the GM was a guy named Harry Dalton. And Mr. Dalton always encouraged me to pursue it. And, it was even kind of a joke in my family. Billy wants to be Harry Dalton of hockey. Yeah. But when I graduated from law school, you have the loans come due. And I didn't have the luxury of taking a low-paying scouting job. Just couldn't afford it. And then you had the opportunity cost of, a pretty well-paying job as a lawyer. So I tried to combine the agency with the law to stay in the game and get myself to the point where perhaps I could shift to a higher-paying job. And I guess it only took me 25 years to do it, but it worked out okay.
And the fascinating perspective that you could actually get with that is you've seen both sides. You understand what it's like representing the player. You understand what it's like the player side of the business. And that has got to give you, and a lot of the current GMs are the same way because they are former players, but being on the actual representation side of it, that's got to give you not a leg up. I don't want to make it a word of leverage, but it's a word of understanding. And it makes it a lot easier, I feel like, to play ball when you understand that you're talking with somebody, whether it be an executive, a general manager, or even an agent, who understands both sides of the game. Do you think that gave you that much needed experience instead of starting out through the scouting department? That other way of it, the actual representation, probably aided you long run in terms of making you as good as you possibly can be at your job, no?
What you hit it right on the head, and it transcends it even deeper than you had referenced. I call it hockey university because you can learn the NHL ins, outs, through the experiences of your clients. So, for example, if I had a guy playing for, I'll make it up, Houston, I could speak to I know how Houston runs their off-ice, their sports science, their strength and development, how they travel, how they feed the guys, how the coaches interact, what the communication is. Does the GM interact with the players? Do the coaches, do they have the players' trust? Are they fighting with each other? Why? How is the rink? How are the facilities? How is the commitment? But you get that from 31 different teams. And then you scout, if indeed you really want to, and you go scouting. Now you talk to all the scouts and you listen. And you're hearing about, I like this guy. Here's why. I like your guy here. I don't really like that guy, Bill. Thanks for offering him. But so it's a constant education in all the different franchises, and then also in their farm teams. So if you really want to learn, it's like this open window to the inside. And that one GM that I was referencing earlier, I had an argument with him, and he said, "You think you know more about this than I do." I said, "Well, I was out with your team last night in the bar. I know who was drinking and who wasn't. I know what they think of you. I know what they think of the coach. I know what they think as to why they lost the game last night." So, be it right or wrong, I could tell you what they think.
Yeah.
And then his reaction. So it was a great learning experience for me. And I still managed to screw it up. But it's
that's wow. Bill Zito with us. Bill, now, once you took over the Florida Panthers, it's been about 5-6 years coming now, and you've made a lot of I don't want to say risky moves, but you have understood the window, the win now window. Obviously, there's no secret that the Florida Panthers have really taken over the sport. They're an apex predator, so to speak, and they got the bullseye on their back now, as you've seen this year. Now, let's start with this year. Coming into this year with no Tkachuk, and that you knew that was going to be a thing for 2-3 months here, and then now Sasha Barkov going down, that's a leadership piece of the team, one of the biggest players, if not the biggest player on the team, not going to have him for the and that's a wait-and-see type of deal. Going into the season, coming off, trying to do something that no team since the Islanders in the 80s have done, and that's win 3 Stanley Cups in a row, was the expectation, did the approach change this year, not only because of the injuries, but because of the historical significance of what the Panthers can accomplish?
Certainly the former and not at all the latter. I don't think we've ever discussed we want to win this year. For this year, we want to win tomorrow night for tomorrow night and stay true to the process and not buy into all of that other stuff because it's just a distraction. It doesn't serve us at all. With regard to the injuries, yeah, I can tell you that my job is to prepare for instances like this. So we live in South Florida. Are there hurricanes that might show up? Yeah, there are. People prepare for them. Can you ever fully? Maybe in some instances, but in our case, like, I don't think I could plan or replace Barkov and Tkachuk.
No.
So, yes, we definitely have to approach things a little bit differently without them in our lineup, but we still want to play the game the same way we always play. And most importantly, as a team, commit ourselves to each other and to the process the way we know is successful. And ultimately will be. We've had some poor results on the scoreboard so far. I don't think we would have enjoyed to have all those scores, but it's something where we have to get better every night, and I'm really confident that we will.
And you're really confident. I think everybody is because of not only the leadership that you provide, but the leadership that you enlisted to help you. You built a team. That's what running a hockey team really is you got to put together the right pieces. One of them was Paul Maurice, who when you got him in 2022 and you signed him, it was the perfect fit. It was the glove that fit perfectly into the what type of team you were trying to build in terms of identity. Take me back to that moment when you knew that Paul Maurice was your guy. What conversations took place? And more importantly, what was the sell? Was it you selling him or was it him selling you in terms of when he finally got involved and you hired him to be the coach?
Well, we had a little bit of a cheat code there because as an agent, I had had a number of players play for him. So interestingly enough, one of them was actually on our staff, Tua Morutu, and then another guy, Brian McCabe, and then another one of my clients who's not with us, but Jeff Hamilton, who was actually in Connecticut. And they're three totally different players and three totally different personalities, and they all said the same thing about Paul. Best coach I ever had, best communicator, best teacher, best leader, best motivator. All right, like that was, how do we get this guy? And he had stepped aside in Winnipeg and was in Canada, and I just called him, and we started talking and suggested that perhaps we meet. We did, and you could kind of tell. I think our first meeting was like, it was like a long time. It wasn't 8 hours, but it was a legit 6, I think. And it was just talking hockey. And I think that the fit was there. If you have occasion to spend any time with Paul, his intellect and sincerity jump off the page. I mean, you can see him in the press conference, how smart he is. But he's as intelligent as he is, he's as caring and sincere in his relationships. So it's such a blessing that we have because he can work the balance between the strategic technical side of the game and then the human side. And I told him for the longest time that the guys, he had earned the trust of the guys. And then after, I don't know, very short period of time, I said, you've passed trust. Now they believe in you. And it's true. And if you have occasion to meet him, he's I think he's the best coach in hockey.
Bill Zito, general manager of the Florida Panthers here. Bill, last thing here. I could do this all day with you. I could pick your brain about all this stuff, but I want to ask one more thing. Speaking of recent, you guys were just at Boston, and the first time that Brad Marchand returned to play against the Boston Bruins after, 16 years there. And that is a notable acquisition that you made towards the trade deadline last year, late in early March, when you got Brad Marchand in the mix. He was a crucial piece of the Stanley Cup run, and he's had an all-star career, and he's been excellent this year to this point. When you got Marchand, and when you kind of heard that, all right, they might be shopping Marchand here, and Marchand, who was a lifer with Boston, making those calls, making that move, was that considered a risk in your eyes, or was you almost surprised that he just fell into your
head? I don't know. I would liken it to somebody suggesting you buy Apple stock before the next phone call. Like it was, look, if there's anyone in this league who comes as advertised, it's him. And getting to know him even more and understanding what a real sincere person he is, and just how he interacts with everybody here, from myself to all of his teammates, to the equipment guys, to the chef, like this is a special soul. And we're just very, very fortunate to have him as part of our group, and really blessed.
And seeing that Brad Marchand tribute that they did in Boston and how emotional he was. And he went on to say post game about how, like, that was first home. Now I'm in second home. And even Paul Maurice said that he's going to be a Bruin for life. And but there's almost something to be said about the culture that you've built with Florida, saying that not only is he embraced being a Panther, but he considers it that second home. But there's always going to be that attachment from the player's perspective that I'm always going to have that piece of my career. That's always going to be the bulk of my career. And I thought that was amazing to see. And I was curious in your thoughts on that.
I think it's wonderful because at heart, we're all fans. And those guys, that's the Boston Bruins. Like, even I got to tell you, I'm watching it the other night. I've got chills going down my spine. You're looking up, you got the Bobby Orr pictures everywhere. Like, it's the Boston Bruins. And it was such a well-done moment. The fans didn't want to sit down. He was touched. Everybody was touched, as they should be. And that's the ultimate goal. If you could ever get mentioned in the same breath as a franchise like the Boston Bruins, that's pretty cool. So I think it's, yeah, we're lucky to have him, and I'm flattered and appreciative that he could call South Florida home.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill, you've done such a terrific job with the Panthers at this point. I appreciate you giving us a little bit of a rundown on the Panthers on the prowl with you and your wife, Julie, who have done a terrific job kind of taking South Florida and utilizing the Panthers for such a great cause, bringing together people, bringing together art and understanding how sports and not only fundraising can bring people together. But, Bill, we appreciate it. Looking forward to talking again soon. Best of luck the rest of the way. I'm sure you got some things up your sleeve that we'll have to break down in the near future, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was great meeting you.
Great meeting you as well. That's Bill Zito, the general manager of the Florida Panthers. Appreciate the time. Panthers on the Prowl is where you can find the fundraising effort benefiting the American Cancer Society. Colin Russo, ESPN 106.3.